afternoon, committee. Before you, you will find the House Special Session Committee rules.
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve the rules as presented.
Representative Butler moves adoption of committee rules. Any discussion? Any objections? We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1028. 10 minutes after four on Friday. All right. With that in mind, let's call forward Brian DeLashford. Brian, here we got two places here. Okay. All right, Brian, I'll let you go first. I'd like to move along today and let's wrap this up as quickly as possible. I will tell you right now, we're not moving the bill today.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Brian DeLashmet. I represent the Oregon Nurses Association, the Oregon Council of Police Associations, the Association of Oregon Corrections Employees, and the Federation of Oregon Parole and Probation Officers. And I know that some of the other First Coalition are scheduled to speak, but I routinely come up and speak on behalf of the First Coalition, and they can give their own testimony today. We're opposed to this bill. We were opposed to the original version, which was a much more strict version, but we are still opposed to this version, primarily sections 2 and 3, which in essence ends enrollment into the current Tier 2 system, and then directs the next legislative session and also the interim task force, the governor and the interim legislative task force, to examine the establishment of the Tier 3, and is at least somewhat prescriptive on the type of plan that they would like them to look at. We're well aware, as you are, that there are currently two systems exploring, or two bodies exploring the options that are available, not only with the establishment of potential establishment of the Tier 3, but also Tier 1 and Tier 2, the Governor's Task Force and the Speaker's Task Force. We would suggest to you that you leave it up to them to bring all the parties together. They are all at the table, and that they will be reporting without being prescriptive during the interim. They will be thinking about what are the best options, best solutions. And I have committed to that, the Speaker's Task Force. I have put on the record in the Senate hearing that as a member of the working group, I am there to participate. I'm there to find solutions, as are the other members of the First Coalition. We are sincere in our effort to try and come up with some solutions. And with that, I'll end my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Brian? Representative Cruz.
Well, Brian, any comments on Section 4?
Section 4, let me look at it. Section 4 is the crediting to the account. I'm not too sure that this does anything other than what the First Board is already going to do as far as how they accredit to accounts until you get out of the debt in the gain loss reserve. So I would see this as the way that the board already is going to proceed. I don't know that we have any philosophical problems with the way that's approached. We just assume that they're going to do this anyway.
Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, I hope this is a question I plan to ask everyone that comes forward. I'd like to know what's the status of any litigation or pending litigation that your organizations may be involved in at this particular point.
Well,
I'd like to know all of the lawsuits that are involved, that any of the associations that you represent.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I'll answer that question to the best of my ability. I know that there is currently the collective lawsuit or the combined lawsuit that was the lawsuit that was brought by the First Coalition. You're probably well aware of that. That's the Judge Lipscomb jurisdiction. Was combined with litigation, obviously, that the employers, at least some of the employers, brought. And my understanding of the status of that is that both oral and written arguments have been made, and that's proceeding. I don't know that Judge Lipscomb has made a final ruling on that. So, to the best of my knowledge, that's the status of that. Other litigation, I'm not aware of any. There is the issue of the implementation of the mortality tables that was done by the first board a month or so ago. There is potential for litigation there, but there is no litigation there because they have not adopted the rules. They haven't gone out to hearing yet, and obviously until they're either adopted in its current form or altered, and we go back through the process, there is no need for litigation, actually no basis for litigation.
Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Follow-up.
So far as all of the organizations that you represent in this election, the collective lawsuit of the employees coalition through Judge Lipscomb, plus the potential, have you filed any kinds of tort claims or anything relative to the pending rule adoption, or are there any other potential lawsuits that you presently have given notice of to any of the public employers or the PERS board or the state of Oregon?
Not that I'm aware of. Again, the only one that, and it's premature because there hasn't been any harm done, there hasn't been any adoption of the rules yet, would be the mortality table.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So Representative Smith.
Mr. Gillashford, you used an interesting term. You said there hasn't been any harm done. What makes you think that we're going to inflict harm upon anybody or any group? And I think we're all in agreement PERS needs to be fixed in some way. All the groups that you represent, how do they think it should be fixed? You say you don't like sections 2 and 3. What would you put in their place?
Well, that's multiple questions. Mr. Chair, if I forget one as we're going
I'll
through,
remind you.
You'll remind me. Okay, can we start at the end? Sections 2 and Section 3, we would prefer to have, in fact, the current system of both the Speaker's Task Force and the Governor's Task Force explore what needs to be changed, both with the current system, Tier 1 and Tier 2, and if they have the collective wisdom to put forward to the next legislative session changes not only to that Tier 1 and Tier 2, but if they were to say that there's a Tier 3 and everybody can come to an agreement on that, you don't need this Section 2 and 3 are irrelevant anyway. So that's, we believe that 2 and 3, all it currently does is get everybody's angst up, one, and also I think it creates a major recruitment problem for employees when you have a drop-dead date for the ending of a system and you have nothing in place. I don't know how you would recruit somebody into that jurisdiction, and that's a major concern that we have. The response to the other question that I am remembering is the question about due harm. That's more the legal term. We're not talking about the legislature doing harm. But in that particular case, if an individual actually has not had something done to them, in this case, the implementation of a mortality table that somehow impacts their benefits one way or the other, then they have no standing for litigation until that point. So in order for the court to even accept litigation, they have to wait for the mortality tables to actually be adopted, go through the rules hearing, and the mortality tables actually adopted in order for somebody to even have standing, because the judge would in fact say, well, there's no harm done yet because we don't even know that those are going to be adopted. And so that's the reference I was making as far as doing some harm.
Follow up.
I'm on the Speaker's Interim Task Force for PERS. What ideas that have been brought forth would your group support?
I'm trying to remember the ideas that have been brought forward, and quite frankly, to this point, it's been more of a data collection process than it has been exploration of some suggestions.
What suggestions, your group specifically, what have you brought to the table for your group that you could agree to fix this problem?
Yeah, let me mention one in specific that I actually brought to the table that a number of us have talked about and actually will explore during the third special session. And I quite frankly think could have been done at that point and should be done in the future. One of the problems you have is obviously the growing unfunded liability in Tier 1 for employers. There is a known number of former employees that are vested in the PERS system, meaning they got vested for, you know, they did their 5 years, and it may, let's say, for example, be a county council, an attorney, did 5 or 10 years in the county. They got vested, their account still sits there, and they are no longer working for a local jurisdiction or for the state. Their account balances continue to grow, and because of that, the liability of the employer continues to grow until they're at the age that they can, in fact, draw that money out. One of the things that some of us were exploring during the third special session is an incentive to have them draw their money out so that the exposure to the employer is diminished over time. And also, in some cases, you may have an employee, or at least it's voluntary, who would find a real need for that money. Again, given the example of an attorney, he may be setting up a private practice and say, you know, I'd like that money now rather than waiting another 10 years. And I would take the incentive to get the money out now versus waiting for a later time. It has a couple of dynamics. It saves the employer some money, some liability, and as it grows again, some liability down the road. It helps the former employee with some money now. And it also diminishes the caseload.
Do you have an actual on that?
There was one, actually. I think Dallas is in the room. I think he did one for Senator Ferrioli on the Senate side during the third special session. I know I do have one, but it's not in the file I'm hearing today.
I'd be interested in somebody can get that to me later. Do you have any other suggestions from the group?
One of the other suggestions that was brought up both by the employers and the employees at the last meeting, and I don't know whether Representative Butler was still there, I know you had to leave right toward the end, was the problem that the attorneys both for the employers and the employees are having, and actually the pro staff has continued to say, the statutes are convoluted, they've been added on to, it's hard to interpret, that's where we have a lot of litigation. I think there's some potential from the attorneys actually on both sides for some clarifying language as to what these things mean. I think there's some agreement on things now that there may not have been before. I think there's some potential for some plaintiff language. And then one other suggestion that I know that we haven't taken a position on, but I'd like to have the Speaker's Task Force continue to explore, is a statutory separation of Tier 1 and Tier 2 in two different sections of the statute. So you're not trying to read whether or not the statute is talking about Tier 1 or Tier 2 and how they interrelate, but actually a statutory separation. And I think that perhaps needs some exploring. And again, the interim, the Speaker's Task Force, that was one of the things that was laid on the table by multiple people. Those are the two that immediately come to mind.
Thank you. I've got four people in the queue here, and remember we have a number of people who are wanting to testify here, and we may want to share the questions around a bit. Brian may not want them all, but Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a small business owner, and I'm very cognizant of cost, especially in this time of difficult economic period. That I think that we need to treat our state like a business. It would be a terrible business decision to yank away the PERS system without having something valid in its place, without having the kind of work done that your committee is doing. And I feel that with a little more time, your group can come back to the next regular session when it's really appropriate to do this kind of work, come back with a plan that has some good ideas that we, the legislature, could follow up on. So I see this bill really as just a sham for not fixing the problem, and I think that we need to fix it at the right time with the right kind of contributions like yours and other folks in this room, financial experts and the employers. Do you think that in this interim before we start the next general session that your group will be meeting several more times and coming up with some fairly valid responses?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lee, the same statement that I made in the Senate side is that we were scheduled September 3rd for the speakers, and that was interrupted. We were scheduled for the 9th, and that has now been interrupted. And I would hope that you wouldn't interrupt our meeting on the 20th. because we have some
talk to the governor, okay?
We do have some business to do. The fact that we have kind of bounced back a couple of meetings puts us a little behind schedule. But again, the same statement as I made in the Senate side. I'm encouraged, and I still believe that these two working groups will have some valid suggestions if given the opportunity before we're in the next session or very early in that session for some reform.
Oh, I appreciate all your efforts. I certainly would concur there are some problems with PERS and some things we should look at, but I think that we're being a little hasty to look at it now.
Brian, I was rather impressed by the work the Oregonian did on this subject. I've been working in the periphery of this issue for a long time, but I felt as a legislator that I was compelled to get serious about this issue when the Oregonian ran their spread on the issue. And not only did they run the issue, but they also made sure that all of us as legislators, as far as I know, received a special glossy printed edition of it that you may be familiar with. We sometimes react to things like that. I remember earlier in the regular session when an expose was done in the Oregonian on the manufactured housing industry, and that certainly gave us impetus to pass quite a bit of legislation relating to that. I think a number of us felt compelled to do something there. The spread on PERS made the one on manufactured housing seem very small in comparison. So I guess, you know, the only thing I would say is that we are perhaps expected to do something about this more so than we've been expected to do anything except in recent days. We're truly under a compulsion to get serious about this. And so I think the concern with many is that this thing is just going to drag out and that the members of PERS are not really going to play along and get serious about this when the legislature feels a true compulsion to show something. So,
Mr. Chair, let me repeat one thing that I said. You have my personal commitment to be serious at the table. When I represent police officers, and they're at the collective bargaining table, and they know that PERS rates for the local jurisdiction are going up, and their health insurance rates are going up, they know that that takes something else off the table as far as their ability for the local employer to bargain and on wages and a number of other things. We all recognize that. The only additional thing that I'll say is that over the last three sessions that I've been heavily involved in the PERS issues, but I've been here 26 years, both the employers and the employees have had suggestions that we agreed to. We agreed on that would have helped solve at least a portion, and I think a major portion, of the unfunded liability problem. And unfortunately, politically, there was at least some players in this building that would not allow that to go forward independent of some other changes that they wanted. And I think that's really unfortunate when you get the employers and the employees to agree to a solution, and for whatever reason, they can't be implemented, and I think we're seeing some of the fruits of that right now.
Brian, I appreciate your pledge. When I came here, I heard the statement that everyone here heard, and that is that when you get here, your word is supposed to be your bond, and my confidence in that has been shaken here in this building in the last number of days. So I don't know where we're going with this, but I appreciate you saying what you're saying, and I certainly will take you at your word. So thank you. Wait just a moment. I think Representative Butler, one more representative.
I did have one more item. Mr. Chair, both your comments and Representative Lee's comments and questions and the responses by Mr. Lashnet are affected by this. And from this point forward, I'm only going to ask two things of those folks that jump forward. One, that those lawsuits in which they're involved. And number two, I'm going to ask you if you're willing to take an oath. From this day forward, using the good faith that's involved here, your word and honesty, that from this point forward, you'll failing passage of Senate Bill 1028, that you'll work positively, collaboratively seek mutually amicable and workable solutions between and among all materially affected parties, and do so honestly and in good faith from this date forward, keeping all affected parties notified of any positive ideas and working towards positive possible solutions.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, the only thing you left out of that was to love, honor, and obey. And
do that too.
And I take that oath.
All right.
Representative Butler, I've been in the building 26 years, and I don't know of anyone, legislator or lobbyist, that feels that I don't work in that manner. And if that's the case, I've never heard it. So you've got my pledge.
Thank you.
I think we have a couple more. Representative Cruz and then Monica.
And Brian, I will never, I'm not impugning your character. You and I have worked well together. But I will say, kind of on what Representative Wilson said, you know, my natural real-world optimism has been somewhat blunted the last 2 weeks for reasons beyond my understanding. But you did make reference to Tier 3. Now, I've been here since 97, and Senator Dirtler has been trying to get to Tier 3 since 97. And are you telling me that now that is something that we might be able to actually get some movement on?
Chair Wilson, Representative Cruz, I can either tell you that we're accepting the Tier 3 or rejecting out of hand, as we have in the past, the Tier 3. What I'm telling you is that as the Speaker's Task Force and the Governor's Task Force collect information and are able to separate the myths and the fact and the fiction, and separate Tier 1 and Tier 2 as to what Tier 2 did or did not do to solve the problem, we are open to suggestions for changes.
Okay, thank you very much. Any more for Brian? Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. You took more than your share, I'm sure. Thank you. Next up will be Tricia Smith.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association, 20,000 nearly classified school employees working throughout Oregon. In deference to the chair's plea for brevity, I won't tell you all the things my written testimony tells you. I do hope that you will take a moment to read it. I worked really hard on my articulate and eloquent written testimony, and I just know you're dying to know all the things I had to say. I will tell you, however, first off, and this speaks to many of the questions I've just heard you ask, Mr. Glassman, that OSCA members first want you to know that they quite literally depend on PERS for their future, and they have been and remain highly motivated to take whatever appropriate steps are necessary to secure and assure the health and solvency of the PERS system now and in the future. It does them no good to bankrupt the pension system on which they rely. To that end, we support the genuine efforts of the task forces of the House and the Governor to find real problems and real solutions for the PERS system. And we have been participating and will participate in a very positive way in those efforts. We believe that a pension system that affects 1 in 7 households in Oregon should be dealt with very seriously and very deliberatively when we're considering changes. We think that you want to know all of the ramifications of your decisions so that you can make the appropriate decisions. When you're making statute, it may be like making sausage, but it lasts a long time. And the impacts of statutes sometimes aren't felt for a long time. So we hope that whatever changes are made are positive changes that bring health and solvency to the system, protect the members within it, restore the faith that we all need in that system, and we are working diligently to assure that that happens. With those things in mind, I will speak to the bill now. Section 2 of the bill gives you reason enough to reject Senate Bill 1028. Senate Bill 1028 in Section 2 abolishes the PERS system for the future without a successor plan identified or in place. And with all due respect, in spite of the fact that Section 3 would lead you to believe otherwise, you know that you have no authority or power to direct any action of the next legislative session. So to abolish the PERS system in this bill with the idea that something may happen next session to replace it, I think is a short-sighted approach and deals unfairly with hundreds of thousands of Oregonians who rely on the PERS system for their future. For that reason alone, we would ask you to reject Section 2, the bill, but there are other reasons as well. As I said earlier, this bill is drastic in the way that it approaches a problem that has been outlined quite effectively by the Oregonian. And there's nothing about this bill to solve the problem that has been outlined by the Oregonian. Abolishing the PERS system will do nothing to affect the deficit that exists in the PERS fund. It will only throw the system in flux for current members who will lose faith, who are losing faith, that there will be a system for them when they retire, and for anyone who may be considering a career in public service, whether they be a teacher, a firefighter, or a police officer, or a person taking a job in a school district that we represent. The problem with the PERS system is the 1-2 punch of the losses in the PERF as a result of the stock market, coupled with the assumed rate guarantee for Tier 1 members. Section 2 of this bill does nothing to address those problems. It merely abolishes a huge pension system with nothing else in place. It also doesn't address the fact that the problems may have already been fixed. You spoke with Mr. DeLashnet earlier about Tier 2 and how that may have impacted the things that have created these problems in the first place. My understanding is that PERS actuaries are currently developing for the task forces information about the effect of Tier 2 on the health of the fund in the future. Before you make a decision here in Senate Bill 1028, we would suggest to you that you wait and allow the task forces to hear that information and determine what the real problems are, what the real facts are about any changes that may impact those problems, and then allow you to fully explore those solutions in a manner that gives you confidence and PERS members confidence that the solutions are in fact going to address the problems in a positive way. Section 4 of the bill, which Representative Butler asked about, seems to codify in statute, as Mr. DeLashnet said, what the PERS board is already doing, and what we believe they will continue to do because they have a fiduciary responsibility to the health of the fund. I don't think it makes any difference if you pass Section 4 into law, except that we know from other problems we have in the PERS system that sometimes legislative action that seems entirely reasonable at the time has unintended consequences in the future because it sets up a rigid statutory requirement that can't be undone. So I would caution you to assure for yourself that there are no unintended consequences with this rigid codification of this language. It seems more reasonable to me, again, to see what the task forces have to say and to look at what the PERS board is required to do under its fiduciary obligation to the fund. I suspect that you will find that the actual mechanics of Section 4 are occurring and will continue to occur into the future, and that by codifying them in this bill, the only thing you're doing is perhaps risking some unintended consequences in the future that you don't need. We don't have a position on the rest of the bill, which deals with legislators as members of PERS and the governor as members of PERS, because obviously we're not. And it's up to you, I guess, to decide what future legislators will have in terms of a retirement system for this service. I would suggest, though, that it might be pretty difficult to develop a retirement plan for less than 100 people. Also might be kind of expensive. And I've heard that DAS isn't real adept at retirement systems all by themselves, which is still suggests that maybe the creators of the legislative retirement, the governor retirement system. So I think they have a lot to do. And so if you want to do that, it won't affect my members, but again, why? We would ask you to table this bill in favor of the more deliberative approach that is that you have already established with the task forces, and to allow that process to work so that next session you can have some semblance of security that changes you make to our pension system affecting literally hundreds of thousands of Oregonians is done appropriately, is done positively, as Representative Butler asks, and is something that we can all have faith in into the future.
Thank you. Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, same two questions of Ms. Smith. Relative to the pending or proposed or potential litigation, the OFEA, Ms. Smith, what lawsuits are your organization presently involved in or anticipating?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, the only lawsuit that I am aware of that is currently in process is a lawsuit brought by local governments against the PERS system in which my organization participates as an intervener. And that is the case referred to as the Lipscomb case.
And having answered that fully, I'm going to ask you the same question. Failing passage of Senate Bill 1028 in this particular session, will you work positively, collaboratively to seek mutually amicable and workable solutions between and among all materially affected parties, and to do so honestly and in good faith from this date forward, keeping all affected parties notified of all positive ideas, possible solutions, and give your word to that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, you have my written testimony assuring that my members have and will continue to remain positive participants in the discussions about how to maintain the health and solvency of this system. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Good question, Mr. Representative Cruz. Just a question based on one of your comments. In your opinion, has the PERS Board historically done an adequate job of dealing with their fiduciary responsibilities?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, pardon me. Representative, I'm the only person I know that's always done everything right, except for a couple of times. So the answer to your question is no, sir. I believe that there have been times when the PERS Board has not acted appropriately under its fiduciary responsibility.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, the reason for that question is, and clearly, Section 4 does deal with what should be happening under normal course of business, but as I have looked at the history of the Option and PERS Board, they have clearly not always been acting in the best interest of the system or the state.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, I would agree with you and add or the membership. However, I also would suggest to you that my main comments about Section 4 are that this is a hastily written section. You have not had the opportunity to truly explore in all areas that I believe you should what the consequences may be of this section in 10 years, in 5 years, and you need to know those things before you make law.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
during the last couple of years, 8% guarantee for me would have been a wonderful thing. And I'm wondering, from my standpoint, the members have done extremely well during a time when the rest of us, for the most part, have taken a shelling. And that's all right, that's the deal. That's what the deal says. My question is, though, during the same period of time, the employers have taken on a lot of water. It's been a very bad time for them, with trouble coming from every direction. If you had an opportunity to make a single suggestion that would ease life for the employers, make it more equitable for them, what would that suggestion be? Something that would truly have an impact.
Representative, that's a question I would rather think about for a while before answering, but since we don't want you writing in the dark, really, the first thing that comes to my mind is that I wish they hadn't been resistant in 1997 and 1999 to changes that we were, as the Perth Coalition, suggesting, which we believe would have eased their current liabilities significantly. I'm out of current suggestions, but we're looking for others.
What might have been, in your opinion, the top suggestion?
During those sessions, we were advocates for pooling local governments. We were advocates for matching, putting employer contributions into money match so that the earnings would match between employers and employees. And there were many other suggestions that we had during the discussions on PERS that have gone on in the building during the sessions and in the last session as well. Many of those proposals would have saved employers money. Rather than passing those proposals, instead we had to have a fight about whether or not new hires should be in the PERS system. And so many of those suggestions were lost in the scuffle. My biggest suggestion would be that we stop using PERS as a political football and instead really get down to serious solutions to real problems, because I believe that we all want the same thing, which is a healthy retirement system.
Representative Smith.
Some questions to you. What suggestions does your employee group bring to help fix PERS?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, as I said, at the moment, I don't have a suggestion for you about what should be done about the problem that exists today, which is a deficit in the PERS fund. The deficit exists because of past mistakes. I'm not sure how that can be fixed short of finding a way for Tier 1 members to opt out of the system, to cause them to want to opt out of the system.
But I don't know
what that is.
What incentive could we, are you saying we need to offer an incentive to somebody to opt out of the system?
I don't.
Why would somebody want to get out of a system that's so sweet? I can't.
Well, there have been times when it didn't seem so sweet, Representative.
Well, I tell you, compared to my retirement fund, it looks pretty dang sweet because I'm in the private sector.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, so am I. I will tell you, I don't know what the answer to your question is, Representative, but I believe...
There's an issue with me that I won't soon forget. Maybe needs to be a reason for me, too.
I believe that it is possible to find a reason for them to want to opt out of that system. But I also understand that your pension is your pension, and it can't be just taken away. They have to be participating in the process. I believe there are solutions, Representative. I'm just not smart enough to know what they all are. I believe that your task force is the place for those solutions to be found and explored.
Okay, thank you for the question. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate that. Next up will be Mary Botkin, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Mary Botkin. We represent about 20,000 employees throughout the state of Oregon and state and local government. We also have folks who work in nonprofit, private sector employment. I'm going to start, if it's all right with you, I'm going to start with Representative Smith's questions because I think that that's a good place to start. I have been a member of the PERS Coalition since the early 80s, and you know, we have been fairly successful in protecting PERS from untoward attacks, as you know. But we've also been advocates for a well-funded, soundly administered system, which this has not always been. I would go back before even Ms. Smith, when she suggested that we should have gone, that the employers should have taken advantage of the variable accounts in 97. I can tell you that back in the early 90s, the PERS Coalition thought it was probably a pretty good idea for the employers to take advantage of the variable account and to start looking at pooling. They didn't do it then. They didn't do it later. And they didn't do it later or later or later until it was too late. Then they finally took advantage of the variable accounts just in time for the stock market to tank. So that was a problem. The coalition also worked diligently against the passage of what became, I believe it was House Bill 3349, the taxation of PERS, where the employers had to offset the effect of the tax with a rate, with a benefit increase to meet their contract obligations, but were not afforded any of the revenue that the tax raised. We fought side by side with our employers, our local government employers, to try to fix that problem, including lawsuits and filing amicus briefs and everything. I mean, I could probably go back in my files and find you the briefs that we filed trying to assist our employers. This has not been a system that we have been unaware of problems in. And probably one of the biggest issues for unfunded liability is the tax issue. And I encourage you to ask the employers when and if they get up here to talk what they've done to resolve those issues as well. Because we did not victimize them in those fights. We fought with them. Though it does feel at times, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that sometimes our employers tend to forget the good times and only remember the bad times. The lawsuits, in answer to Representative Butler's question, the only lawsuit that we're involved in is as an intervener and defending the system against the lawsuits filed by local governments and their attorney, Bill Gary. And we continue to defend the system against those what we see as some pretty preposterous positions, and we just throw the system in utter disarray. And so we'll wait and see what Lipscomb says, but that's the only lawsuit that we're involved in. I agree with what Mr. Glashman said about, you know, you don't file lawsuits until there's some damage.
Representative Smith, you have a question.
So you have any ideas? Has your employee group says, Mary, you know, this is our situation. Gee, this is how I think we can fix it. Because I know of all of the people whom you represent, they are not mum on this issue.
No. Can I answer that in a little different way, maybe?
No.
Can I talk to you about what we're doing to get there? Because I think there's a normal process of events that gets us to a discussion that's a little bit different. And what we're doing is I am working actively, I know some of the other coalition members are as well, we are actively holding employee group meetings with our members to explain to them, one, how PERS works, how the funding of PERS works, and where the financial dilemmas have emerged and why. You know, kind of fundamentally what's wrong. And as you work your way through that, then you can begin to have a discussion about needed changes. And rather than, it feels a little bit like Senate Bill 1028 gets in the way of us having an open and honest discussion with our members about what's wrong and kind of what we need to fix, and then kind of systematically leading them to be a part of the solution rather than just feeling victimized by a bill that they don't understand when they don't understand the system yet.
Right, what do you think about something with Tier 1? Do you think Tier 1's a problem or should we leave it alone?
I don't think we can do anything with Tier 1. Okay? Now, and let me say this, maybe in the same way that Ms. Smith said it, which is, I don't think you can reach in and take things away from Tier 1 employees. I think the only way you change Tier 1 is if they voluntarily give it back to you. I don't know what the magic mix is that makes them willing to do that, but I'm willing to explore a lot of new and different ideas. And if I could
just be taking those ideas, raising the questions with yeah. employee groups, if I yeah. could just make a comment. This is my third PERS committee this year, and my learning curve has been a rocket.
Your what?
My learning curve has been a rocket.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and I understand even these people and these employees and are paying into this, they don't know diddly about it. And I think the work that you're particular group is doing with them is going to be extremely helpful. I think maybe we need to look at some ideas that have not yet been raised. And regarding Tier 1, Tier 2, or whatever else, I don't think that we should hamper our ideas or be naysayers to anything. It's not my intention to do anybody harm. Somebody who has worked at a job for many numbers of years and have been promised retirement should receive it. To that end, I want to fix this system.
Mr. Chair, can I respond to that?
Please.
I could not agree with you more. I have not, when we conclude our presentation with our members, my experience has been is that not one member, well, I shouldn't say that, you always have one or two, but the vast majority of our members get the fact that there's a problem. And once they understand that nobody has the right to reach in and take something away from them, they tend to be much more inclined to have a discussion about how you change the system in a way that is both beneficial to them and beneficial to their employer. And, you know, with the exception of a few employers, our members generally have a very good relationship with their employers. And we have a good relationship with many of our employers and find that we can work in a cooperative manner to have some fairly open discussions about new ideas. And I think that's what the task force really is about opening up the box and finding a lot of new ideas and finding a mix of things that might make everybody a little happier than they are currently and make the funding a little easier.
Thank you. Representative Melissa Anderson.
One of the old ideas, in fact, I heard that the board's already considering this as a mortality rate and the adjustments thereof. What is your organization's view on that, and would there be losses if they truly were implemented in Tier 1?
Mr. Chair, Representative Monsanto Anderson, you know, I just asked everybody what the bill number was, including Dave Hendricks from the third special session. You know, I can't for the life of me remember what the bill number was, and neither can anybody else. But in the third special session, the PERS Coalition actually brought forward a bill that would have immediately implemented the actuarial tables on what we call the staggered or segmented approach. It would have saved the state of Oregon, or it would have saved the system over $500 million over a period of time. In this session, in this budget that you're working on today, it would have saved you $15 million. Now, I know that's peanuts in the world of the deficit that we're looking at, but it was a good faith effort on our part to say to you, as legislators, we are prepared as a coalition and as people who represent the members of the system to put $500 million in benefit reductions on the table, and we will go back to our members and tell them that we did it. And we offered, on the record, we said, we will not file suit. The PERS coalition will not file suit against any benefit reductions as a result of that. You know, I have 20-some thousand members. If there is a benefit reduction, I can't stop somebody from filing a lawsuit. What I can do is say you don't have access to the PERS coalition lawyer. You don't have organizational support for them. That is a commitment that we made to you, AFSCME Council 75, made to you as elected officials in this body. That bill went nowhere. You know, we have, you know, as you look at the actuarial tables, that was a bird in the hand. And that was something the PERS coalition brought to this body in good faith. It was rejected. And instead, they have chosen to implement actuarial tables immediately, which has a dramatic effect, or could have a dramatic effect on benefits, which means that every member of the PERS system has a right to sue. We can't give away $1.9 billion in benefits of our members. We can't do that. We could come to the table with a solution for half the problem. We couldn't come to the table to solve the whole problem. We didn't create the whole problem.
I take a solution for half the problem.
Unfortunately, Representative Smith, Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, the employers in the room weren't willing to accept that. It was made in a good faith effort. I mean, everybody in the coalition sucked it up and said, we'll do this. And that was not without some recompense, by the way, as we ran out into the units.
Representative Butler. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to set the record as you straight. There was some poison bill language in that bill that could not get amended out of there, that basically would have left all local governments and participants in the of the employers, and I'm sure we could hear from other of the employers relative to that, that would have granted some vested rights in a single mortality table. And the mortality tables, not the official U.S. government Bureau of Statistics mortality table, but the mortality tables were just indexed this past week again. And to think that you have a right for eternity to a mortality table, which is absolutely outdated, is asinine. And I'm going to say it straight out. It's wrong. With that, Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask Ms. Brockman a question.
Do I get to respond to that?
Wait a moment. Right, I'm excited to hear what the question is.
The
question is, failing passage of Senate Bill 1028, will you work positively, collaboratively to seek mutually amicable and workable solutions between, among, and among all material affected parties? Do so honestly and in good faith. From this date forward, keeping all affected parties notified of all positive ideas and possible solutions on behalf of AFSCME.
Representative Butler, you and I had this conversation yesterday in your office. I said I'd do it yesterday, and I'll say I'll do it today on the record.
Thank you very kindly.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Any further questions?
So just for the record, something Mary had said, I believe the House and Senate working on the budget.
Well.
I'm going to respond to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I start, I just wanted to remind you that, you know, we talked about this. I'm an Eagle Scout, and I just wanted to tell Representative Butler that I promise to be trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, kind, be great, clean, and reverend. And I hope that works out. I do have a question about Section 4. I have to take kind of a global look at this because some of you are ahead of me on the learning curve here. And the two questions. One is, where does that language get in the way in terms of contractual rights the courts have weighed in on? And second question is, there's been some testimony that some of this is already being done. And if what is being done is that what we're talking about, this language in changing the 8%, the automatic 8% to no more than 8% until the fund is repaid. Is that what is being done exactly?
I just think that is what's going to happen. I mean, that's the practical effect of these down years. And I can't speak for anybody else in the coalition. I can tell you that with our members, I'm being pretty clear with them that those people who are in Tier 1 will probably not see, I mean, they're kind of like benefiting from this 8% guarantee, but they're never going to see more than that until the deficit reserves are repaid. And because we're borrowing against the system to make that money, to pay them those returns, and the system has to be paid back. And the deficit reserve, or the gain loss reserve, has to be rebuilt. And so, you know, I think that I agree with Mr. DeLashman. I think that the practical reality is that they're not going to see any more than that, and that Tier 2 is not going to see, I mean, they're going to see whatever the stock market gains or loses. I mean, that's just the reality. And I'm really glad, Representative Haas, that you brought up Section 4 again, because there is another change that AFSCME would support in this. We would do, as we look at changes, we would actually support changing the five-year call. Because we think that if the stock market does not recover in the near future, that the five-year call could actually make things so much worse for our employers that if they had to pay all the unfunded liability in 5 years, because of the stock market, it could just be devastating, and that we would probably extend the five-year call to a longer period of time, just because we don't think the system or the employer goes away. I mean, we think everybody stays here.
Just to follow up, there's no administrative rule or language yet that has that in there, the 8% language that we're talking about. You just think as a practical matter that it's likely.
The board is not going to do that. I mean, the board is just going to do what makes. I mean, I think that's just good sense. Okay. I mean, I think those are board decisions, and I think the board is just going to do what is responsible, which is to pay back the money that has been borrowed against the system when we start getting more than 8% returns. I mean, I just want to just get above 8% again. I want to have that problem. I want to have the problem of figuring out what to do with excess earnings instead of trying to figure out how to borrow more against the system.
Harry, I've got a question for you relating to the task forces, and I believe there are two operating here. I'm totally unaware of the composition of those task forces. Who happens to be on those task forces? Do you have any confidence in the personnel there to do a good job?
Our director, AFSCME Council 75 Director Ken Allen, sits on the governor's task force, and I sit on Representative Canopa's task force. I have absolute confidence in the members who sit, at least from the labor side, on the governor's task force, and the PERS coalition members who sit on Representative Canope's task force. I think that we are going in there literally with our sleeves rolled up, prepared to work our way through the problems, and I just don't think we know how big the problem is. I don't think we know
what the solutions need to be, and I agree with what everybody else has said, is that I don't think we know what Tier 2 has really done yet. And I'd like to see some projections on PERS behalf and just outlining, you know, does this work its way out, or do we need more systematic changes? And I just don't know the answer to that. I'm not being evasive, and I'm not trying to be cute. I really don't know the answer yet.
Well, I expect you to like your guys, but I'm just wondering if we can categorize the other people as the other guys. What are your thoughts on that?
I have confidence in most of the folks who sit on Representative Canope's task force on both sides to try and find solutions. I've only sat in on one of the governor's task force meetings, and I think when some of the private sector folks get beyond pontificating about how enraged they are about PERS and start getting down to really working their way through the problems, that that task force, too, will be able to maybe accomplish something. But I do think there is a level of pontification at this point that needs to be worked through, and I trust the governor and his staff to be able to handle that. It's certainly not my job.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? All right, Mary, thanks for your time today. Appreciate that. Next up will be Mark Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson. I represent the Association of Oregon Faculty and also represent the Oregon Judges Association. And I won't say much about in terms from the regular employee point of view, in terms of the faculty, a lot of that has been already covered. Just to say that in higher education, the issue of recruitment is a major, major issue. And you've heard much testimony over the years in terms of the level of salaries we currently pay within the university system. They rank in the bottom 20% quartile of the country in their comparators. The PERS system has been one of the only shining lights that we have been able to use to recruit faculty into this state, and because our salaries are so low. So the recruitment issue that you've heard from other people is a major issue when you deal with faculty. I want to spend just a little bit of time, however, on the judges issue. For some unknown reason, and I don't know why, judges have been included in this bill. And in testifying in the Senate, I became somewhat aware because of, and I think it's somewhat of a lack of understanding of the judge's system. The judge's retirement system is a totally separate system within PERS. It is totally divorced from the regular PERS system. Judges have both a defined contribution and a defined benefit plan. We have a statutory cap of 75%. I want to repeat that. A statutory cap of 75%. It is, again, a totally separate system within PERS. There is no 8% guarantee. We don't get money match. It is a defined contribution and a defined benefit. And I think that's very, very important. All of the issues that are issues within the regular PERS system, and we face on the faculty side with every other regular public employee, are not issues that are faced on the judge's side. Again, we don't understand why they're ending the judge's retirement system, which, in compared to other retirement systems in the country, is basically viewed as a rather mediocre retirement system for judges. Again, it is very, very separate. The employer contribution, for example, has actually gone down for judges over the last 5 years. Again, very different dynamics that push this system. Judges, of course, start later in life as a judge, as you all know. That's why the system was set up as it was, as a defined contribution and defined benefit. Recruitment clearly is an issue also with judges. We have been somewhat innovative in our judge's retirement system with what we call Plan A and Plan B, but it provides a reasonable, but again, average type of retirement system. One criticism that I've heard on the Senate side was,
But we don't want judges ruling on the PERS system. They're in the PERS system. They shouldn't be ruling on the PERS system. I can tell you from my knowledge, judges in the state have never ruled on the PERS system as it relates to their retirement. They have ruled, obviously, on the PERS system as it relates to all other state employees, a system that they are not in, that they do not participate in. So that's a very important distinction, that their rulings have been on the other side of the PERS system that is unrelated to their own personal retirement. So there's no personal benefit in those rulings. We can question and disagree with those rulings that have occurred over the years, but those are rulings that have been made, but again, they are unrelated to any kind of personal interest in the system. So again, I just want to emphasize the differences. There is a cap on the retirement that at 75%, there is no 8%, there is no money match, and I just don't see any reason why we're going to end the judge's retirement system in this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
A few questions.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Butler. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that.
Just one question, Mark, relative to the defined contribution, defined benefit. The defined benefit, 75%. How does that tie together with the defined contribution portion of the plan and then no money match? How does that work from a functioning standpoint?
The state and the state picks up the retirement just like for other employees.
The defined contribution.
Right. And the defined benefit is there is a formula for under Plan A, it's 2.8% up to the first 16 years, and then 2%, is my recollection, thereafter. Under Plan B, it's 3.75% for the first 16 years, 2% thereafter, up to a maximum of 70%, 75%, excuse me. Let me give you an example. Under Plan A, if you work 16 years, you'll retire at 45% of salary. Okay? Under Plan B, if you work 16 years, you'd retire at 60% of salary, but would be required under Plan B, and that's what makes it very unusual, to give 35 days of pro tem judges services each year for 5 years. That's the difference. So you have experienced judges coming back after retirement, putting 35 days of judges time. And that's how they qualify. Some judges have stayed in Plan A, a lot of others have gone to Plan B. So it gives them a little bump. But again, after 16 years, they're only at 60%. But the max they can earn, which hits about 23, 24 years, is at 75%, and that's it.
Thank you. Follow up. The two questions that I've been asking are relative to the lawsuits, and I appreciate the fact that the Judges Association are not involved in these lawsuits, higher education faculty and the other justice folks that you represent.
We have not, Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, we have not been an intervener in those cases. We are supportive of the positions held by the PERS coalition members who are interveners, so we are supportive. We are not involved in any other lawsuit. As to your question, the answer is yes.
Okay, so you will work positively.
Positively, absolutely.
Forward. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Representative Smith.
And same question for me. Judges aside, your faculty members who are the most learned and certified smart people we have in society today, do they have any ideas on how to fix the system? Is that a loaded question or what?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, a lot of those have been covered. I think in terms of Tier 1, you have, the court has been absolutely, absolutely clear in terms of the ability to take away the rights in Tier 1. I believe the innovation comes to how do you craft packages that will encourage, as I think Mr. Glashman and others have said, craft packages that are a win-win for employers, the system, and employees. Employees have a myriad of different personal issues in their life and desires and places to go and changes that they want to be made, And I believe you can fashion packages that can save the system a substantial amount of money and give incentives for employees, basically, to leave the system and to move on and do something else.
What kind of incentive would that be?
Well, it would be bringing upfront some types of benefits or financial or cash awards for in exchange for getting out of the system.
Buy them out, basically.
Buy them out. But that over the 30-year term of or whatever the remaining term of that person in terms of retirement would in actuarially save a substantial amount of dollars. That is one of, I think, the very few places that you have to go in Tier 1 if you recognize and believe that the court was right in their decision and that you're not going to get them to change their mind. And I don't think you will. So I think that's one of the places to go. Everyone has made a lot of mistakes in this system. Both PERS coalition members, both PERS board members, all in hindsight and Monday morning quarterbacking, as have employers. And I agree that I think there have been a lot of statutory proposals made in the last 5 years that could have been enacted. If not for the position by some, I will enact nothing unless I get third tier. And we have lost millions, if not billions, of dollars with that attitude. Now, having said that, I want to throw it all on the employers. We have been stubborn over the years on issues, too. I believe that you have to make these task forces work. You've got to have people that come together and it's going to set some of that aside. But we've got positions that either side that, well, I'm just not going to go there. Or I won't allow 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 unless I get tier 3. We're never going to get anywhere.
Thank you.
And you believe we've reached a time in history with this that it is time to see some movement?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. Absolutely.
Thank you. Any further questions?
All right,
thank you, Mark. Appreciate that. Senator Byers dropped by, and I presume he is here to testify. Senator? Committee, I know you're tired. We're going to be moving this on as expeditiously as possible tonight. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Roger Byers, state senator from, I think it's 9. It used to be 15. Anyway, I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 1028, as you might understand. I carried the bill on the floor twice. Took 2 times to get it here, as you might know, by the finale D version of the bill. I'd like to explain, I guess, maybe the background for the bill. I mean, this bill has been described as everything from ending the world as we know it today to do nothing. And it's a lot closer to the second of that. This bill does not really do a whole lot to the system. What this bill does, and what this bill is intended to do, is to bring the parties to the table, to get them to negotiate in a good faith way, so that we can actually do something in PERS in the next session. The Senate President, who had this bill introduced at his request, has been working and been a member of the legislature for 14 years. He's been working on this issue the entire time. The problem we have is that one side of the table has never been engaged to come forward and actually discuss it, because they have the system they want and they're happy with the system they have. So all they've ever done in the past is stood up and said, we don't like that, when you talk about a new tier, and it comes off the table. If this bill is to pass, what it does is it forces both sides to the table and they have to discuss it in good faith and try to come up with a good idea. It doesn't stop the Speaker's task force. In fact, it references it and encourages that task force to be successful. It doesn't stop the governor's task force. It puts more pressure on those efforts to go forward and to come out with something that everyone agrees to. This is not doing something behind closed doors. All this is saying is the next legislative assembly is going to take action on a third tier. And that action could be as simple as repealing this bill. And it may be something as sweeping as a real third-tier program that's totally different than what we have today. We cannot bind the future legislature. I think all of you know that. This bill doesn't attempt to do that. All it's saying is that there will be some sort of action. It will take a positive vote of some kind to keep a PERS system for future employees. That's what it does. There are the other little components, the one dealing with the 8% guarantee. That was basically fixed in Senate Bill 134 last session. The language included here just clarifies it a little bit. It doesn't change the current practice of the PERS board at all. They're already doing what this says. This just clarifies it. We then
there is, and whether it is real or perceived, but there is a conflict of interest when you have the legislators and the governors inside the PERS system. This bill removes that conflict of interest by taking them totally out of the PERS system and have a set of a totally different system for them. That's all the bill does. And it's not intended to take judges out of a PERS system. If we put that language in there to say this bill applies to judges, because we want them at the table too. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the system the judges have now. Sounds like it works pretty well. But we want them engaged with the discussion so that their input is there too and valuable. And it could be very simple that we design a third chair for other people and the judges keep what they have. I think that would be great. But we want all parties at the table. This bill is the one bill that brings them to the table and keeps them there for an honest discussion on the issue. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Byer, a question I would have is what we're hearing today from members of the PERS Coalition and so forth is, okay, we're ready to talk seriously. And I gather that by your introduction of this bill, at least when it came through, you or others do not believe that. Your comment on that?
Mr. Chair, I believe if this bill passes, the members of the PERS Coalition will be ready to engage seriously.
Thank you. Is this, in your opinion, antagonistic and inflammatory to the overall relationship between employers and employees?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't believe so. We are not, no one is trying to take away any benefits of any person who is hired today. This bill does nothing to any employee who is already on the payroll or will be on the payroll between now and January 1st of 2004. Actually, let me clarify that. December 31st of 2003. This bill does nothing to those employees. It doesn't speak to their issues at all. This is talking about only in the future. And the courts have been very clear. We can set up new systems for employees who are now on the payroll. As far as the issue of this will set up this, you know, different classes of workers and people getting different benefits between Tier 1 and Tier 2 and Tier 3. Well, I would tell you that we have that today greatly between Tier 1 and Tier 2. And we have that in employment right now in public agencies. I know of the cases where you have people who have gone from one place where they are a member of PERS to another where they're working for PERS where the local government has the option to be member of PERS if you bring a PERS employee or employer from somewhere else. Let's say a sheriff's office, and they go to a sheriff's or a police office who is not a member of PERS, but they have their own pension system. They can keep their PERS benefits now. There's great differences in what the same employees doing the same jobs, the same length of services will have when those two employees retire now under the current system. We already have that. So this doesn't do anything to that. I want to be very clear. We are not talking about taking any benefits from any current employee. They've already accrued, and anyone that they're going to get in the future, if they're already hired, up until December 31st, 2003. This is not about the employees who work in the system. This is about a system that we need to fix.
Tell me again about the relationship between this bill and the two task forces. With the two task forces, first of all, do you have comfort with those task forces? Do you think they're worthy, valid?
Mr. Chair, I think they're very worthy and they're very valid, and I think absolutely nothing will come from them unless this bill happens.
Thank you. Further questions? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Byer, I'm persuaded by your comments, and I appreciate these comments. If this bill were in fact to be referred and was in fact passed by the House, yes or no, will the governor sign this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I do not answer that question.
Follow on, Mr. Chair.
Follow on.
I'm most anxious relative to the fact that the judges are included. Your comment is that the judges should be at the table. It sounds like they are, in effect, covered by a different portion of the PERS system. What is your response to the judges, other than that we really want those folks at the table when we're examining everyone else's? It seems like they have a system which appears to be fair and adequate and works properly. What's your response to that, Senator?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, the judges do have a different system, but at the same time, let's be very clear, they are members of the PERS system. Decisions made about the PERS system by judges affect them also. They have a different benefit package than everyone else does, but they are members of the PERS system. So, as to whether or not, and theirs is a defined benefit plan, clearly. That's what the judges have. And I think that needs to be a discussion at the table. I personally think the judges should be in a separate system, much as this bill does, with the legislature and the governor, so that they are not a part of the PERS system, because those three branches make decisions on the system at which they are members of, and I think there's an inherent conflict of interest there. I'm not saying that the judges' benefits should be lower than what they have today, but what I'm saying is that they are part of the system, and that's why I think they need to be at the table to be included in these discussions.
Additional follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
Do you have any idea, Senator, any of the in the Senate work group and the other work groups that are ongoing, do you have any idea who, and this is a leading question, sorry, I've got to ask it, who the highest paid PERS employee in the state might be?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I do not know who the highest employed, highest paid employee in the state would be, a PERS person. I would assume it is probably one of the appointed officials and one of the department heads. I don't know that. But I also want to very clear, Mr. Chair, and Representative Butler, you said the Senate committee or panel who's working on it. There is no Senate task force or committee working on PERS. There is a speaker's task force and a governor's work group. I just want to make sure you're not misled that there's a Senate panel going on also.
Thank you. I beg your pardon. I didn't mean, Mr. Speaker, or Mr. Chair, to indicate. I knew that there was, that Senator Gerfer, President Gerfer, had been working on this for some time, so I misspoke. May I continue?
Sure.
Senator, assuming that the State Accident Industrial Fund employees, SAFE employees, are covered, and I understand that they are, under the PERS system, and assuming that the current president of PERS, Ms. Keene, is being paid something in the vicinity of $300,000 today, is it possible that she could be retiring from state government as a fairly young lady at something in excess of $300,000 a year in benefits out of the PERS system?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I do not know the answer to that question. I do. If she is a long-time state employee covered by PERS system and the money match portion of her plan has generated that much income, I would say the answer would be yes, but I do not know the answer to that question because everyone's account is, as you probably know by working in the system, it's an individual account, and I don't know how long she or anyone else has been employed, you know, on what salary they make. I mean, we simply have to ask her that question.
And the final question, if I may, please, Mr. Chair. Senator Beyer, do you feel like that the parties have worked well together at this point, that they have a defined mission to accomplish satisfactorily, some sort of at a defined date, getting this job accomplished? Or is perhaps the intent of the bill to say, we just don't think that you're moving fast enough, that there's not enough motivation, we've got to put a little pepper in the process here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, as I heard members of the Speaker Task Force testify in front of me when we had this bill up for work for public hearing, the Speaker Task Force is moving along. It has missed a couple dates because of some legislators keep coming into special session for some reason. But they seem to think that they were working toward some solutions.
And I thought that was great, and I think this bill would encourage them to work toward a solution. My own experience, and as limited as it may be, President Durfer's experience is they will continue to work and talk about this issue for as long as they can, and they will never come to a solution unless there's a deadline looming them and staring them in the face. And currently, there is no deadline because they have a system. If this bill were to pass, there would be a deadline, and they would have to come to a conclusion, or the next legislature would have to come in with no direction from them.
And a final question, Mr. Chair. Just have any ideas? I understand that the bill, in reading the bill, provides that the appeals can be made to the Supreme Court. Do you have any costs, estimates, any idea what the appeals might be and how long those might be ongoing by the various parties who might be consider themselves aggrieved under the passage of this legislation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, it was testified in front of our committee by legislative counsel that they don't see on what grounds someone could challenge this bill for quite some time, because it will be many, many years before anyone knows if they were harmed by this bill unless we see 20% returns in the stock market again very soon, because the only part of this bill that could potentially be challenged is the part that speaks to the create or the limiting the assumed rate. And there is no one can prove they've been harmed until we have that done. And that's from what we're, legislative counsel said, that's many, many, many years down the road. The only other potential challenge to this bill would probably be from a legislator or from a governor. And at that point in time, it won't be until after 2003 or the 2004 elections, because it only affects legislators and governors elected or appointed, or not elected, but taking office or being appointed after July 1st, 2003. So I believe we are probably talking, July or the 2003-2005 biennium at the soonest anyone could challenge the bill.
Mr. Chair, just a comment in that regard, not a question, but it does appear that the folks that really couldn't be a challenge as to the folks that are going to be employed after the 2003 period of time, because those folks really don't exist and don't have any station in court at that point. So I tend to agree that we don't know what that cost might be, but there certainly could be a cost, and I guess I would like to talk or have an opportunity to ask counsel at some point, what the potential costs of what the existing costs of lawsuits have been, and maybe give us some forecast. But that is of concern, but I do recognize that there's nobody going to bring a lawsuit on behalf of somebody who might get employment after 2003.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Any further questions for Senator Byron?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Urgent, I vote.
Thank you. I have on the sign-up sheet only two more who are set to testify here, and that would be Maria Keltner and Michelle Deister. Would you both come forward here? Let the two of you determine who goes first.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Michelle Deister with the League of Oregon Cities. I will do my best to be mercifully brief. Our goal at the League has always been and continues to be good benefits for our employees at stable, sustainable costs for employers. That hasn't changed. It will not change. However, we do want to be on the record in support of Senate Bill 1028B. We, too, are participating in the Speaker and Governor's task forces, and we're doing so in good faith, but we feel that this bill provides a greater incentive through the imposition of a deadline for fruitful discussions and work towards the issues surrounding PERS.
Michelle, your advocacy for this bill would indicate that you think a deadline does need to happen. You're in a situation of employee-employer. I would think you would be concerned about possible antagonism and so forth. But apparently your desire to see something move ahead outweighs any potential hard feelings that could come.
Why is that? Historically, why?
Mr. Chair, I would say that we worked very hard in terms of amendments to this bill to make sure that it only applies to future employees. Existing employer-employee relationships are very important to us. We can't provide services without employees, and we have a lot of very good, competent people in our cities that we really want to hang on to. At the same time, we also are experiencing fiscal pressures from a variety of sources, of which PERS happens to be one very large one, and it continues to escalate. We've been told by the PERS board to expect another rate hike, if you will, of 3.5% to 4% on average among employers. And we don't see, even during times of the major stock market gains of the late 90s, we were experiencing rate hikes. It's just been a real hard cost for us to contain, and therefore the containment of our purse costs is a major priority.
Thank you. So it was important to you to preserve your relationship you have with those currently employed and simply look at this as a prospective issue to help in the future time.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Okay. Right. Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, and the League of Oregon Cities, I assume, Ms. Eicher, are involved in this employers coalition with Judge List and other lawsuits that you're involved in or pending?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, actually, some of our member cities are involved in that lawsuit, but we as the League of Oregon Cities are not. And the answer to that is there are no others that I am aware of.
All right. And a follow-up, Mr. Chair. Ms. Dyser, I've asked the other folks that are at the table if they will work positively, and we'll have Representative Hatfield, the scout oath and raise shoulder here, that they would work positively and collaboratively to seek mutually amicable and workable solutions between and among all the material affected parties and do so honestly and in good faith from this date forward, keeping all affected parties notified of all positive ideas and possible solutions, failing passage of Senate Bill 1028. Would you be willing to represent that the League of Oregon Cities would come to the table and do that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, absolutely.
We've got a pinprick later on for a blood chair, but we won't do that. Right. Thank you very much.
First, there's no way I'm in there.
I'd just like to guarantee the quality of those sharps. Representative Smith, did you have a question?
Just a quick question. Do your employer groups, have they brought a solution to the table?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, there are a number of possible solutions that an employers coalition has been discussing. Unfortunately, all of the employers haven't all been able to come to agreement on all those areas. There are some individual cities, for instance, that think some cost containment ideas are a good idea, such as perhaps the ability to opt out of the PERS system, for example. Others don't agree that that's such a good idea.
I would encourage your employer groups to come to the table with ideas of their own on how to fix this, because if we don't hear from both sides in an equal fashion, my opinion, this is just one little opinion is all this is, then the legislature is going to have to make the decision. And we could end up very well with something like this bill. So you need to get your people together, and maybe not necessarily in agreement. Bring several. I would love each of these groups that I've asked this question to today to bring several. And quite frankly, I'm not satisfied with any of the answers. So maybe we might need 1028.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, we are working through some possible suggestions and solutions, and I think as these task forces proceed, you will hear some suggestions that we hope will help to contain our costs.
So you have vested a certain amount of hope in the product of those task forces?
Mr. Chair, absolutely.
Yeah. Maria.
Afternoon, Chair Wilson and members of the committee. I don't remember the name of this committee. Sorry. My name is Maria Keltner. I'm here representing the Association of Oregon Counties today. Most of the county elected officials and county staff people that have been working on issues related to PERS are also PERS members. They're Oregon residents, PERS members, taxpayers, and employers. And on the one hand, they can look at the benefits, and on the other hand, they can look at how do we provide services to the citizens in our county under the restrictions with the budget, the budgetary restrictions, the financial restrictions. And the goal has been for a number of sessions, continues to be the goal, with a goal that was jointly adopted by both the League of Oregon Cities and the Association of Oregon Counties, which is good benefits for the employees and stable, sustainable costs to the employers and taxpayers, because the public employer basically is the taxpayer in terms of their source of funding. AOC is looking for two major areas. One is to the terminology that's sort of been used is stop the bleeding, and the other is to replace the lost blood, which may or may not be the best example, but that is some of the terminology that's been used. Another example has been we've got a contamination or an infection, and what can we do to contain it and keep anybody else from catching it? As they're looking at the unfunded liability and looking into the future of having to cut services in order to provide the retirement benefit because there's only so much funds to go around. The areas they're looking at is a successor system for new members. Some of the counties to respond to your request.
Thank you. You're anticipating my question.
Some of the counties would like a successor system for all members to end the current system and start a new system for everyone. There is agreement among the counties that there should be a successor system for new members at least. Some of the counties would also like the option to opt out of PERS and develop a local plan that they can negotiate locally with their local union and meet the needs of the people that are their employees, given that there are different sized counties and they're all over the state with different kinds of needs, both from the employer standpoint and the employee standpoint. The second area that AOC is looking for is a cap on crediting earnings to the Tier 1 regular member account. And there was work done in Senate Bill 134 in terms of trying to get the deficit reserve to zero when the last Tier 1 person leaves, that at least would encourage, hopefully, the board in the future not to set a goal, which they did before. They set a goal of having enough funds for 24 months if there were no earnings, and then changed it to 18 and distributed additional earnings. Now the goal is back up to 30, but to the best of my knowledge, they never even filled it to meet the 24-month goal. It was a goal, and they were putting a little bit toward it at different times. So the goal never had been reached.
Representative Mona Sanderson, question.
Explain again what we're capping here. You said a cap on crediting, and I missed it.
The terminology in the statute is interest, but what's being credited is unrealized stock gains. Fair market value of stock is what they're using as to credit. So it's not really interest. It's not really realized earnings. But what's in the statute and the practice are don't exactly match language-wise. The third area is an expedited appeal to the Oregon Supreme Court in case there are issues about contract rights, and this bill contains that. The fourth area that the counties are looking for is a funding source to help them with the unfunded actuarial liability that's already accrued, and that's the replacing the lost blood part of the analogy.
Representative Lee has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm wondering, I'm not familiar either with the makeup of the two committees, but are there financial independent experts or advisors that are not state employees without a state interest taking part in these discussions who might be able to review those ideas for their fiscal ability?
Chair Wilson, Representative Lee, in terms of the county discussions or the governor's and the House task force, I'm not sure which group you're asking.
To be clear, I'm speaking of the two task force. Are there members of those two task force who have financial backgrounds who are independent of being an employer or an employee related to the system?
Thank you for the clarification, Chair Wilson and Representative Lee. There are people with financial backgrounds on the governor's task force, and I believe that at least some of the House representatives that are on the House task force have financial background also. Representative Butler is on the House task force, and I'm not positive about the total background of the other representatives in terms of financial expertise. Thank you.
Further questions? Representative Butler.
I just want to make certain that Ms. Kellner, two questions. One relative to the lawsuits. Is it AOC that's participating in the Lipson lawsuit, or is that lawsuit represented by members of the AOC, some certain members of the AOC? And are there other lawsuits that are pending that you're part of?
There are individual counties that are parties to the Lipson lawsuit, as it's being referred to, who are also members of AOC. AOC is not a party to the lawsuit, and I'm not aware of any other lawsuit that AOC is a party to regarding PERS or anything else for that matter.
Not AOC. Thank you. And then, Maria, assuming that the failing of passage of Senate Bill 1028, will you on behalf or someone representing AOC work positively, collaboratively to seek mutually amicable and workable solutions between and among all the materially affected parties, and to do so honestly and in good faith from this date forward, keeping all affected parties notified with all positive ideas and possible solutions? And can we have your word on that?
As a representative of AOC, AOC is committed to that.
Thank you very kindly. Appreciate it. Thank you, Keisha.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Do you have anything in information you'd like to lay on us here?
Just to say that I appreciate the work that the legislature is putting into dealing with the PERS issue, as well as the stakeholders.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Representative Butler, let me ask this question. That exhausts the sign-up sheet. Is there anyone else who wants to say a word or two? Okay, come on. When he's through, Representative Butler, do you want Councillor Hendricks up here?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Schweinhardt with Associated Oregon Industries. I've been asked more than once, why is the largest business association up here interested in this issue? And I will tell you that our members are not only business people, but they're taxpayers. And they look at what is currently and now somewhere around a $5 billion deficit and unfunded liabilities. And my understanding is the next 5 years it will go somewhere over $12 billion. We are very concerned about that, particularly at a time when we're trying to find new revenues, and some of those new revenues may be new taxes that we don't want, and I said we, being taxpayers as well as business people, want taxes raised to pay for runaway PERS benefits. And we think it's time for the legislature who created this to take control of it and start making some moves in that direction. The committee's moving in that direction. But we also think that any way, opportunity to make changes, you should take advantage of it and move it. And let's move it forward and keep it moving forward. This is not the end of the process. This is basically the beginning of the process. And we think you need to push, keep it going. So we would encourage you to move 1028. We encourage you to keep pushing on the issue, and we encourage you to find ways of funding that unfunded liability, which is really in the long term going to cost the state a tremendous amount of tax money, and which obviously could be used for better benefits.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, and I apologize to Joe that I missed a portion of his testimony yet. Joe, I think you're serving on at least one of the work groups at this particular point. Is AOI in any way an intervener or a party to the Lipscomb lawsuit in any way, or are you involved in any other potential litigation?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, no, we are not.
Okay. And in that process, on behalf of AOI, will you, failing the passage of 1028, would you be willing to work positively, collaboratively, and seek mutually amicable, workable solutions between and among the materially affected parties, to do so honestly and in good faith from this date forward, keeping all the affected parties notified of all positive ideas and possible solutions?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the questions. All right, sir. Thank you. Appreciate that. Green. Let me tell the all present, the House is in recess until 9:30 tonight. Purpose being is they are convening a work group to work toward a signed by tonight. So, that's the story.
There won't be any movie.
Remember, it's the second is your clock to by 9 o'clock. We need the building to find out when we need to be back.
You know, too many funny guys in the year that start to leave their luster.
Mr. Chairman.
I agree. Ms. Green, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Green representing the Oregon School Boards Association. I intend to be very brief. Number one, Representative Butler, we are not a part of the lawsuit that's going on in Judge Lipscomb's court, nor is any member of our association a part of that. To your other question, yes, we will participate in good faith. The only thing that I would add to that, and what this bill accomplishes, is your statement that you're asking people to say yes to says from here on into the future. That doesn't set a time certain. This bill sets a time certain for when something has to be done, and we believe there's an impetus to do that now. The other important part of this bill that we believe we need, and we work very hard to get amended into this bill as it currently stands, if you take a look at the printed bill in front of you on page 2, lines 36 through 39, current statute requires the Public Employee Retirement Board shall attempt to assure that the reserve account is funded with amounts adequate to cover all Tier 1s until they retire. If you take a look at page 2 of your bill a little farther on down, lines 40 through 45, and then page 3, 1 through 6, what this says to the PERS Board is you shall not attempt, you shall do it. You shall make sure that that account and those retirement benefits are paid, and that account has a zero balance when they retire. There is a huge difference between you shall attempt and you shall do. As a lawyer, I spent 3 years learning how to make the distinction between the two words in law school. And that's what lawyers are hired to do. We're hired to make distinction between words. Current law says you shall attempt, PERS Board, and what we're trying to do in this is to say, PERS Board, you have no option. You cannot credit greater than the assumed earnings rate until, one, the deficit is taken care of that we're currently at, and you have a gain loss reserve account that has a balance to take care of all Tier 1 retirees. That is a big difference between what's currently in statute. If Section 3 of this bill, which creates a impetus to bring people to the table, or Section 2, I guess, is the big problem, then I'd say let's eliminate it. You've heard from folks here now that they're willing to come to the table. But we need this section of the bill, because I will tell you, the current PERS Board, which you have a member of the board here in the room, has guaranteed us that they will do this. But that doesn't make any guarantee on future boards. Should the makeup of the board change, we believe you have the ability to put in statute what the plan is. There is a huge difference between shall attempt and PERS Board you shall do. With regard to the rest of the bill, we really don't have an opinion with regard to legislators, governors. That's up to you folks to decide that. Representative Smith, you asked for suggestions. I have pages of suggestions from the Oregon School Boards Association. Some of them will take a very lengthy explanation as to why. With regard to health insurance programs within PERS, we also have some with regard to substitutes and the 600 hours question that we currently have school districts, a school district in South Plains County that received a bill from PERS in excess of $45,000 for a substitute employee that worked for them over 25 years ago. They were not notified that the individual had clicked over 600 hours to begin setting aside funds. We believe PERS ought to be telling school districts when their employees, their substitute employees, are coming close to 600. And that's not to say we're going to say, well, we can't hire you anymore because we're going to have to pay PERS. I wish that were the case. The pool of substitute employees, whether they're classified or certified, across the state of Oregon is not big enough for us to do that. We have school districts today, when somebody calls in sick, we don't have a substitute to cover for them. Let me say that again. We don't have a substitute to cover for them. The list is not big enough. We have to bring administrators in, either the principal of the building, principal of another building, or someone from central administration in to cover that day. This is not an ability for us to say we're not going to hire you because you're coming up on PERS. We need to know when to set the money aside. This is a very small school district down in South Plains County. Received the bill. Now, you might ask, why would you want to say in the statement that Representative Butler is asking folks to put a time certain in there? Because I was told in the regular session when Senate Bill 134 passed by individuals that the part that dealt with bonding for unfunded actuarial liabilities for employers was fine. Well, guess what? We were told it wasn't fine 6 months after you guys left town. We came back with special session number one to amend that, to allow school districts to go into the bond market and pay off their UAL. Which, by the way, is terrible public policy. You're going to go in debt to pay a benefit. But if you can save money, it makes sense. We were told, again, by individuals in the building, it's perfect, it's fine, there's no problem. 3 weeks after you left special session number one, we were told it's wrong. Special session number three came around again, and I was before you again asking you to vote on a fix to the bonding for employers. I have trouble when those things happen and the bond market prices have gone up and the savings that school districts could have realized had they been able to go to the bond market after Senate Bill 134 was enacted and saved millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, and people tell me everything's fine, nothing's going to change, and then they do change. And they change because actions of those individuals, none of the folks that have testified here today, by the way, yeah, I have a problem trusting people with regard to that. School districts in this state are pooled. They've been pooled since PERS was created. That is not a fix for us. We've been pooled since PERS was created, and our rates have gone from below 5% to 12.73 now. We also received a letter from Mr. Voitko to our school districts that rate's due to go up 3 to 3.5%. That doesn't include the current valuation of PERS. We believe it's going to be upwards of 18%. Pooling is not the answer that we're looking for here. We've got to get cost containment around this. Can you fix things for Tier 1? No. They've got contract rights. You've got a U.S. Constitution, Oregon Constitution says you can't impair a contract, right? You can do whatever you want to Tier 1. It's going to be a breach, and then you're going to pay damages. And the damages are in excess of hundreds of billions of dollars. But can you create a system that would put some cost containment in there for employers, create a system for employees? You bet you can. And we believe that the folks that testified today will be at the table, but we sure would like to see a time certain. That's what this bill does. Absent that, we need the part in there with regard to the assumed earnings rate. Shall attempt versus you shall do this is a direction from you to the board, and you have total authority to do that. You create the plan, and you tell the board what to do within the plan. If that's going to tube the bill, the part about a time certain, we would suggest amending that out because we believe we need this section of the bill so that your directive to the PERS board is very clear.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Cruz and Representative Butler.
Jim, if the new language in Section 4 had been in place 15 years ago, what kind of shape would we be in?
Representative Cruz, Mr. Chairman, Representative Cruz, that's really hard to discern, but I have in front of me from the PERS website the distribution of earnings that the PERS board gave over the last 10 years, and, you know, when the PERS fund in 1997 for Tier 1 distributions earned 20.42%, the PERS board distributed 18.7%. We don't know you know, had they made it only the 8th, what that would have done to employer accounts, what it would have done to employee accounts, and I'm not suggesting you want to go back and take a look at that. What's done is done. But had that been in there, would it have saved us some money? Would it have left the UAL a little bit smaller than it is now? I think undoubtedly anybody in the room would tell you, yeah, probably so. But I can't tell you how much. And I wouldn't begrudge the PIRD board their decisions back then. But I think it's time that we say realistically to folks, you have an assumed earnings rate, Tier 1, and it's, right now it's currently set by the actuary at 8%. And we shouldn't pay any more than that until we try to retire that deficit. And we make sure that there's a pot of money there so that when all Tier 1 recipients are gone, that there's the money there to cover that. And I'm very encouraged by Mary Bodson saying that they'd like to take a look at extending that payback on the deficit from 5 to a larger number. I tried to stick in 1028 10 years. I was told by individuals in the building that they wouldn't support that. Because what PERS has said, when the call is made, and you can argue when the call is going to be made, it's going to be made sometime within the next 4 years for sure. The deficit as to it relates to employees to help pay that back will be erased. PERS will do an accounting move that will shift that deficit to employers. They have said that. They said it on the record on the Senate side. We would like to see it extended because maybe if you can get to 10 years, the stock market can turn around and get those earnings back up. I don't know if they can or can't. So I'd be interested in exploring that with Mary Bodkin about what years are we looking at. If it's 5 to 7, if it's 5 to 6, we'll take it. Because I don't think the market's going to turn around within the time period to get that deficit taken care of. And it's a huge, huge liability that's going to be handed to public employers. I don't want to create a system that decimates for our employees. We have a hard enough time recruiting folks into our school districts right now. Do I have suggestions about that? I've got a lot of suggestions about how you create a system that can do that, that doesn't damage employees and encourages folks to be working in our public schools. It would take a long time to go through that, but I'm willing to share those with you at any time.
Thank you. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jim, I'm not a lawyer. You are. Would you humor me for just an answer? What's the value of an agreement to agree?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, the value of an agreement to agree would depend on the ability to enforce that agreement.
Okay. You're anticipating my next question. So the next question is, what's the enforceability of nothing more than an agreement to agree without a time certain?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, without a time certain, an agreement to agree, and I don't think there is any enforcement built into that. Other than the fact that, as Mr. DeLashman said, you're only as good as your word. And in this building, that's a lot. As a matter of fact, you know, in our trade as lobbyists and in your trade as legislatures, you're only as good as your word. So within this building, it's going to be enforced against folks. But we see we need that time limit in there to get people to the table. I think everybody's going to come to the table. But we sure would like to see something in there that says you got to come to a table. You got to have a product finished by this time. And we know we can't affect our current employees, and we're not trying to affect our current employees. We're talking about future hires. So is it going to save us money right now? I'll tell you today, it's not going to save us any money. It saves us money, and it saves local employers and taxpayers money into the future.
Follow up relative now. Given an agreement to agree, which has an enforceability clause and a date certain, would that be of value to the parties that were involved here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, I would sure like that. At least at that point you say, you've got to agree, you've got to come to the table, you've got to play fair, and you've got to come up with something by X date. Do I think the folks in the room are going to try to do that? Yeah. Do I think it's going to happen by the end of the next session? I don't know, because there are going to be a lot of issues for the folks that are sitting at this table that are going to be back next session. We're going to deal with shortfalls again. You're going to have a budget that you've got to try to balance. We've got a myriad of things we'd like to see done, and there's 800 of more folks like me running around the building that have greater ideas about what they want to take up your time with next session. PERS may get moved to the back burner. I hope not, because our school districts are yelling at me out in the field, Jim, you got to fix this.
Final question, Mr. Walker. Thank you. Jim, recognizing that you do assist in some of the work groups that are around here, and
again, assuming failing of passage of 1028, would you be willing to work positively and collaboratively to seek those solutions among those parties and to do so honestly in good faith from that, this date forward, recognizing that there is no enforceability to that and no date certain? It's an agreement to agree, which I think is worth very little except your word.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, I absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
All right, anybody else?
A comment following up Jim's testimony, because the school district he was talking to is in my new district. And I have a lot of small school districts in my district. And I would say that the thing that is impacting schools maybe even more than what we are doing right now is the cost to them of both PERS and health care. I mean, well, and energy too. That's sort of 3M. I mean, it's an escalator that is unanticipated, and the future is unknowable as to what that escalator is, and it's eating them alive. And so I would say there should be a lot of things on the table this next session. I can't see any way that in any responsible way we push this issue to the back burner.
I'm Representative
Butler, thank you, Mr. Chair. In as much as Representative Cruz has made some indication as to what his district includes and who those folks are that might be in trouble, I think it's only fair that I divulge to the to this group that those cities and special districts who have the worst rates of assessment or highest rates of assessment in the PDRS system, all three of the top ones, of those top cities and small districts, are in House District 60, being the largest district in the state and the most rural district in the state. I think one of them is at 48% assessment. I think another one is at 30, some of the other two are in the high 30s. And it's pretty tough that when you pay $100 in compensation to the city employee of the city of Huntington, the recorder, I guess, of the city of Huntington, that you've got to pay $48, $49 to PDRS. That's a pretty tough pill to swallow for these little tiny towns. And as a result of some of the concerns that I've had, recognizing that the PDRS board is not here willing to come forward on a lot of this stuff and anxious to move forward, some of those small towns and districts are going to bankrupt. And unfortunately, one small district has for, I think, probably 15 years been unable to get anyone to run for its board because of the concern over the liability insurance and the difficulties that are out there relative to these kinds of things. So I just would have to state that coming from this portion of Oregon, which appears to have some of the most affected members in the PDRS system, I need to declare that potential conflict of interest, because it's going to decimate some of these small towns. Now, I don't know, maybe the PDRS board would like to own the city of Huntington. The roundhouse is now gone, the trains are no longer stopping there, so, but they could still, you know, have it for a fairly cheap price if they would buy off on the 5-year program.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Smith.
I would be curious to know why the OEA has not testified today, because they certainly have a large number of employees who are affected by this.
Great. My name is Becca and Darby. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Education Association. The only reason why I didn't step up is because we participate as part of the PERS Coalition. Many of my colleagues have testified, and I echo their concerns in regards to the bill as well as the solutions that they have brought to the table. In regards to Representative Butler's questions, I will anticipate them and tell you that we are part of the lawsuit as an intervener, as described by my colleagues, and yes, we are willing to come to the table. We do participate in both the governor's task force as well as the speaker's task force on PERS.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate that. All right. Before we wrap it up again, I'm not sure who was here, who wasn't, but the House is in recess until 9:30. If you're going going to leave the building, make sure you check in with your caucus office. The hope is perhaps a signee die tonight, but we'll see. Okay, thank you. If nothing else, that will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1028 and committee is adjourned.